Good evening. You're listening to A Question of Balance on 2SER 107.3 FM. And I'm Ruby Vincent. Well, it's taken a while as a result of all those electricity problems that we had in South Australia and then New South Wales and then the federal budget and so on. For our sustainability expert or consultant, Dr. Barry Manor, to get on with our personal sustainability ways of improving things. So great to see you there, Dr. Manor. I do see you. I can see you on Skype. Yeah, what have you got for us so we can get on with doing something useful, even if various powers that be may not be doing so at this instant?
That's a very valid question in the sense that our political leadership does not seem to be particularly engaged with matters of sustainability. And therefore, it's really up to individuals and businesses and even corporations on the big end of town to do the right thing. And it's encouraging to see that some businesses and people indeed are doing the right thing. And, you know, it's usually a win-win because if we aim to be more efficient, whether it's energy efficient or produce less waste or get food that's been grown more locally or whatever it is that we decide to do, it usually saves both the pollution and all sorts of resources and things like that, as well as money. So it's generally a positive outcome situation when you make a decision to move in that direction.
And often it means improved employment and activities called work for people who live in the local communities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's completely part of the economy is part of that picture as well. And there it improves cash flows in local economies. It's kind of, in a way, I guess it's the opposite of globalization, where you know where products and money and all sorts of things travel vast distances to other countries. And while it is a global economy, often local economies suffer at the expense of that. So it's kind of the opposite of that.
I agree with you. You agree with me. But we know this isn't the way that a lot of Australia is going. You know, we don't seem to be being sensible here yet again.
Yes, I agree with you. Unfortunately, this seems to be the case.
Right. Well, what have you got to maybe get us to move a little way? In a way, we will do something. You know, we won't move much if it's any kind of inconvenience to us.
Yeah, look, I think there are things, for example, that we can do around our own homes, whether we live in houses or flats or anything in between, whether we own our own premises or whether we rent. There are certainly things that everybody can do that can help by, for example, using less energy and therefore producing less greenhouse gas emissions, because most of, as we mentioned in an earlier program, most of Australia's electricity comes from burning coal. So the less we use, the less emissions from coal that we generate. So yes, so let me give a couple of examples of where we can actually save energy in the home. One thing that I have mentioned before is lighting. Lighting has really, I think it would be fair to say, lighting has been revolutionized in the last few years in the sense that we now have available in supermarkets and hardware stores and or electric shops, all sorts of things, LED lighting, whether it be an LED light bulb or an LED fixture that is a whole light fitting that includes an LED light element in it. In my view, this technology, this LED lighting technology, is absolutely amazing. It lasts a very, very long time in service, if it's good quality, that is. Some of the lesser quality products don't last very long, and I'll talk about that. And it produces really nice light. You can choose whether it's warm light, like a more orangey kind of light, or a cool white light, which is more kind of harsh for kitchens and factories and things like that, where you need to see rather than feel comfortable. So LED, there's virtually an LED lighting product for every application you can think of and for every home and workspace and factory, whatever you like. So yeah, I strongly encourage people to have a look at LED lighting. certainly old style incandescent light bulbs are now illegal to sell in Australia, so you can't really buy the general purpose light bulbs anymore. You can still get some special ones that are, you know, a odd shape or a special application, like for the back of your fridge or whatever, but just general lighting incandescent bulbs you cannot buy anymore because they are not energy efficient enough. There is a threshold that goes up and up and up every year in terms of the amount of light produced per watt of electricity consumed, and incandescent light bulbs don't make that threshold anymore. So there was an interim technology known as compact fluorescent lamps, CFLs, which were very popular there for a few years, and they generally sort of they fit into existing incandescent lamp fittings, and they're not a bad form of lighting, but they had a few issues that people didn't like. For example, they took a few minutes to ramp up to full brightness after switching them on from cold. They would start rather dim and then gradually become brighter. People didn't like that at all. That was a major criticism of that lighting technology. They also are a form of fluorescent lamp, and by definition, that type of lamp contains a small amount of mercury. So when millions of these things end up in landfill, it does create a bit of a problem with mercury getting into the surrounding area and contaminating the soil and the water and that sort of thing when they get smashed up. They are still available, and you do indeed need to be careful. If you go into a supermarket, for example, to look for some energy efficient lighting, you need to look very carefully at what you're buying and make sure that it is actually an LED lamp or light source rather than a compact fluorescent, which is generally known as energy saver bulbs. They tend to be known as energy savers. So you do need to be careful that you're not buying a compact fluorescent lamp when you're intending to buy an LED lamp. And the way you can tell is just usually by looking at the lamp. The compact fluorescent lamps are maybe in a spiral or a number of thin little parallel tubes together in a cluster, whereas an LED lamp doesn't have any tube formation. It's usually some sort of often yellow-looking little element that produces a blindingly bright light, although it might be an enclosure so you can't actually see the LED directly. But usually on the box, it'll say LED if it's an LED, and it'll say compact fluorescent lamp, CFL, or energy saver if it is not an LED. So avoid the compact fluorescent lamps at this stage, because LED is a far superior technology.
Now, one thing I did want to ask was, why don't we have the incandescent lights anymore? Did the government actually pass some regulation saying you can't have this kind of lighting or what? I mean, how come we managed to go from something which usually I think they're made overseas anyway, they're awfully cheap, how did we manage to succeed in getting rid of them?
Well, that's a very good question, Ruby, and it's a kind of funny answer, because I was actually directly involved with helping the federal government formulate that regulation that makes it now illegal for those lamps to be sold. It's known as the Minimum Energy Performance Standard, or MEPS. And minimum energy performance standards apply to all sorts of things, like light bulbs and fridges and all sorts of electrical appliances that are typically found around the home. Just as it happens, I was a consultant to the federal government on this issue, on the minimum energy performance standards for lighting. And so how it works is that every year the threshold goes up for how many lumens, which are units of light output, are produced by a lamp for each watt of electricity that the lamp is rated. So incandescent lamps or bulbs are extremely inefficient as a lighting source. They are only 5% efficient. So that means they only convert 5% of the electricity that they use into light. 95% of the electricity they use goes into heat. So they're a very efficient heater, but a very, very poor form of lighting in terms of energy efficiency. So that, as it stands at the moment, the minimum energy performance standards thresholds are way above what an incandescent lamp can deliver. So they simply cannot deliver enough lumens per watt to satisfy that threshold, and anything that falls below that threshold becomes illegal to sell.
No wonder you are so keen on talking to us about lighting. You really are an expert about it.
Well, I mean, that's just one area that I happen to work in with the federal government. But, you know, there's lots of other areas of energy efficiency as well.
Okay, well, while we're on that one, and you had mentioned about raising the minimum lighting required, has this also occurred with the LEDs and all the rest of it? I realise they're a lot higher in terms of the lighting they're putting out, but are there requirements gradually increasing as well? Has this made them more efficient and effective?
Yes, indeed it has. Just to give you some figures, and this is astonishing stuff, an incandescent light bulb puts out about 10 lumens per watt of electricity consumed, whereas a current garden variety LED lamp, for example, a Philips brand that you can buy in the shop, puts out over 100 lumens per watt. Now, that is 10 times more energy efficient than an incandescent light bulb. So initially, LEDs could put out about maybe 70 or 80 lumens per watt. They now available readily commercially in a form that can put out 100 plus lumens per watt. And in labs, they've got to like 230 lumens per watt, which is insane. So they're getting better and better almost every week, and every month you're getting better and better products. The mainstream brands like Philips and Osram are a little bit conservative, and they tend to watch the market for a few months before really embracing the latest developments in technology. So their luminous efficacy, as it's called, the amount of light they put out per watt, is always going to be a little bit lower than the cutting edge available at any point in time. But nevertheless, the brand name lamps are very, very well designed, well manufactured, and they will last a long, long time. They usually have a service life of at least 10 years under normal conditions. And just on that point, if you get a cheap, unknown brand of lamp, like, there's any number of really brands that no one's heard of, or no brand at all that you can get in discount stores and things, it's false economy, because while the LEDs themselves are usually fairly reliable because there's only a sort of finite number of factories that make them, and most of them are reasonably good quality, even in China, the electronics that govern the current that's supplied to the LED, which is critical. If you overcurrent an LED, it dies immediately. So the electronics that supply these things in unbranded or unknown brand products are usually very poorly designed, and so your lamp is not going to go the distance, and it's not going to last 10 years.
Do you think they'll have a short lifespan? I mean, in terms of the manufacturers, do you think as the availability of high-quality LED apparatus increases, these El Cheapo ones will just die a natural death?
Oh, yes, well, they do. I mean, they come and go. You know, there are sort of brands that are slowly establishing themselves. I'm not sure if it's, you know, if I'm allowed to give brands, but
we avoid names.
There's just certain, well, there are certain sort of cheap brands that are available, you know, in hardware shops and in supermarkets and things. They're just not good quality products. For example, I had one in a bedside light, which I used to use while I was reading in bed, and the thing buzzed. You could hear it humming at 50 hertz, which is the frequency of our mains electricity, and that immediately indicates a poor design, because no good design LED should operate at 50 hertz. They should be operating at thousands of hertz, at frequencies that we can't actually hear. So as soon as you hear an LED lamp buzzing, it means that it's poorly or cheaply designed and made. So yeah, definitely try and stick with the brand names. They're not really that expensive. You can get a decent LED bulb, you know, that's the same shape as a traditional lamp for maybe $12, $15. Now, that does seem like a lot of money for a light bulb, but bear in mind, you're not going to have to change that bulb for 10, 15 years. So the cost of ownership, if you look at the whole life cycle of that light bulb, it's actually really cheap, and it'll use less than 20% of the electricity that a normal light bulb would you otherwise use. So spend the $15, get yourself a good quality bulb, and be happy.
World-renowned scientist, humanitarian, conservationist and UN Messenger of Peace, Dr. Jane Goodall returns to Australia with her message of hope for the future. Think Inc. and the Jane Goodall Institute Australia invite you to enjoy a rare opportunity to witness her on stage on June 23 at the Horden Pavilion. Info and tickets at thinkinc.org.au. Sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
There was a scheme at one stage, or at least they wanted it, where when you're trying to assist people in low income areas, rather than taking money off their electricity bills each month, you replaced their lights with LED ones. So you were giving them an investment that would reduce their bills every quarter.
Yes, you're right, Ruby. There were many schemes like that, and they were actually part of a government energy savings scheme which encouraged businesses to spring up that would provide more efficient lighting to households, in many cases for free. But unfortunately, all that policy that drove that tended to occur in a time when compact fluorescent lamps were the key new technology on the market. So they were giving away loads and loads and loads, literally container loads, truckloads of those things, of the compact fluoro lamps for people to replace their very inefficient incandescent lamps. Unfortunately, those schemes were not particularly well orchestrated, in the sense that many households ended up with cupboards full of compact fluorescent lamps but didn't actually install them in their sockets around the house, because they didn't like the way that they didn't reach full brightness when they switched on, and there were various things about them that people didn't like. So while the businesses supplied the lights to the households, they weren't installed. So the whole objective of the scheme, which was to reduce energy demand, was a bit of a failure. Now, as far as I know, those schemes have not extended to LED lighting, which is a much more recent development in the technology space. So it's pretty much up to the individual householders to go out and get their own lamps. It would be great if there were new schemes that still allowed that to happen, to get subsidized LED lighting, especially for low-income households, because that is a win-win. It reduces energy demand, it saves the householder money, and it gives a very nice quality lamp that won't have to be replaced very often at all.
And it's a one-off thing for, well, could be 10 years.
That's right. It's a whole different kind of business model way of thinking about it, because, you know, whereas an incandescent lamp was pretty much a consumable, disposable item, LED lamps have much, much, much longer service lives. I mean, we're talking like 1,000 hours, if you're lucky, from a incandescent bulb versus 50,000 hours for a decent LED fitting, you know. So it's just chalk and cheese.
That's lighting kind of sewn up, and a huge amount of energy saving there.
Yeah, a massive amount of energy saving, to the point where the modelling of the energy retailers, who predicted that obviously that electricity demand would go up each year, for I think 4 or 5 years in a row, electricity demand actually went down. And while we can't attribute that solely to energy efficiency improvements in lighting, it certainly played a part in that reversal of the trend, and actually got the retailers of electricity in a bit of trouble, because they based their billions of dollars investment in the poles and wires on the assumption that demand would go up, and it actually went down. So guess what? They bumped up electricity prices to make up the shortfall.
Fancy that. Now, I think the really good story or aspect of this story is it's a measure that was adopted. Not just ordinary people did it, but business did it and the government did it. You know, you had those three layers of consumption or agreement all in it together. Surely that must have been an important aspect of the success.
That's a good point. And I guess the lighting improvement that we've seen around Australia in terms of energy efficient lamps and what have you, that is an example of something that was driven by regulatory pressure. So, you know, simply by the fact that it became illegal to sell standard incandescent light bulbs caused a revolution in lighting, you know, one way or another, no matter which way you look at it. So that is an example of something that was perhaps led by the government in turn, you know, and it was international best practice. It was good legislation. It wasn't the current government. It was a previous federal government that actually did all of that. And unfortunately, these days, the sort of political climate has changed such that they seem to be very wedded to old technologies, particularly in generation where they still think that there's a future in coal. The current federal government doesn't seem to be very proactive in the sustainability or energy efficiency space at all. And as a result of that, the change that's arisen as a result of that is that it's more up to the individual and individual businesses to implement these changes. So people are doing it not because they have to, because the law says they have to, or because they can't get a product that anymore and they have to get an alternative, but they're doing it because people who know that LED lighting can save, you know, 80% of their electricity bill for lighting are going to go out and go, well, hey, you know, it just seems like a good idea. It costs a little bit more up front, but wow, it's going to last for at least 10 years and it's going to only use 20% of the electricity. So let's go for it.
And I imagine if business, the people who sell these things, see they're coming off the shelf really quickly, they're not going to be slow to fill that market, are they? They're not going to wait for the government to say, you do it.
Absolutely, absolutely correct. It's going gangbusters. I mean, the amount of companies that are out there providing LED lighting to the commercial sector, the industrial sector, the domestic sector, it's incredible. I mean, it's big business. And, you know, refitting warehouses with LED high bay lighting and all sorts of stuff, it's happening every single day.
Yes, the warehouse use is something most of us would never think of, even though we quite happily go to places like Bunnings and IKEA, which have got these enormously high ceilings and are always well lit.
Yes, exactly. That is a very good example. And interestingly, the last time I was in Bunnings, they didn't have LED lighting. They had what's known as high-intensity discharge lighting, which is, yeah, it's kind of in between. It's certainly not as good as LED lighting, but it's a lot more efficient than incandescent lighting. Those lamps don't last very long. That's the problem. And their output diminishes slowly. Do in factories and warehouses and big spaces that are lit like that. That's known as high bay lighting. They tend to replace all of the bulbs at once. So they hire a big scissor lift and somebody gets up there and replaces all the bulbs in the warehouse all at once because it costs them money to hire the scissor lift and get somebody up there to do that work. So a lot of the bulbs are replaced before they actually need to be. And basically those bulbs just gradually lose their brightness over time. They just put out less light. So slowly the ambient lighting in the space becomes dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and people think that their eyes are failing. But yeah, look, it hasn't quite reached Bunnings as far as I've seen. Certainly a lot of warehouses and factories do now have LED high bay lighting, and fixture for fixture, you're talking about like a 460 watt fixture, which is a 400 watt metal halide bulb and some ballast losses totaling about 460 watts per lamp or per fixture, I should say. And you can replace that with an 80 watt LED fixture that'll put out the same amount of light and do so for 15 years. So definitely good economy to go to LED for lighting for that sort of application too.
Sydney Film Festival is now on sale. There's over 350 screenings of 288 films from 62 countries over 12 days in 10 venues. From the magnificent State Theatre in the city to the Ritz Cinema in Randwick, there's bound to be a film and a venue just right for you. It all happens from June 7 to 18. You can buy your flexi passes or single tickets right now at sff.org.au. Sydney Film Festival, proudly sponsoring 2SER 107.3.
You know, it's one of those happy instances where a new technology comes around. The business case for implementing it is stunningly brilliant. I mean, going to LED lighting technology on a large scale and even on a small scale often makes very, very good financial sense. For example, a factory, it might cost them, say, $35,000 to swap all their high bay lighting from metal halide to LED technology. But if they're leaving those lights on for, say, 16 or 18 hours a day, which is not uncommon in warehouses and factories, they will pay back that upfront investment of $35,000 in around 4 or 5 months, which is incredible. So they will save $35,000 of electricity in just 4 or 5 months and recoup the cost of doing that lighting upgrade. In 4 months, they will save $35,000 worth of electricity. That is incredible. I mean, that's a return on investment of over 200%. So that is a very, very, very good return on investment.
Right. Well, what about the ordinary householder? At what rate do LED lights save them money on their bills?
Well, for example, if you look at a downlight, a lot of houses have lots and lots of downlights in their ceiling. And downlights are a little bit nasty, the traditional halogen ones. Most houses have low voltage ones that run off transformers that are hidden somewhere in the roof space. So each one of those fixtures is usually around 60 watts. That's a 50 watt halogen light bulb plus 10 watts for the transformer supplying it with energy. And if you replace that with an LED, you're looking at about an 11 watt LED that can run directly off the mains. So you're replacing a 60 watt fixture with an 11 watt fixture. And, you know, that's basically going to be using a lot less electricity. And generally the payback for that, if you leave them on, say, 8 hours a day, the payback for that will be much less than a year. So that's also a very good return on investment for the household, and will immediately start achieving electricity savings and continue to do so for a very, very long time, with the added benefit of producing less heat in the space that you're lighting, because the LED lamps run a lot cooler and produce a lot less heat, so less work for your air conditioning to do as well. So less air conditioning work, less maintenance, i.e. having to change the light bulbs less frequently when they're LEDs, and much, much less energy use adds up to a very, very good solution and business case.
Okay, thank you so much. It's always a depressing pleasure to speak to you on these topics. That's Dr. Barry Minor, our sustainability consultant and definitely an expert on efficient lighting. I guess I'll
have to change my plan. On May 27, you may well have to change your plans if you don't want to miss the 2SER Bob Dylan Birthday Marathon. 2SER's celebration of all things Bob will go for 8 hours and feature news, reviews, interviews, the Bob Dylan quiz, and all the Bob songs that fit, starting at 8 p.m. and going through till 4 in the morning. The Bob Dylan Birthday Marathon on 2SER, May 27 from 8 p.m. 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music, and Bob. It's a hard rain's
gonna fall. UTS is number one again. Ranked as Australia's number one young university for the third year in a row. As a truly modern university, we never look back. By continually challenging conventions, we not only change the status quo, we improve it. Join us for a course info evening. For options, dates and other details, go online and search for UTS Course Info Night. UTS, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
Program today, we heard from Dr. Barry Minor. Stories and sound files are on the AQOB website, www.aqob.com.au. We'll be back again next week at the same time. I do hope you'll join us then. And in the meantime, please take care of the environment. Bye-bye.